Welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, and life itself. Mahatma Gandhi said that the greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way in which its animals are treated. So for this hour, we decided to look into the greatness of this country and discuss the state of animal welfare in the U.S. Animal rights, defining the greatness of a nation, is our topic today here on An Organic Conversation. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
And Sita Rani Balamar. Well, I always feel like there's an opportunity to learn more on a topic than we already know. I was raised vegetarian, and it wasn't until I adopted a vegan lifestyle that this whole other side of the dairy industry was opened up to me and what that means for the treatment of the animals. And being somebody who was actually raised vegetarian, I thought I knew about the treatment of animals. I thought that's why I had chosen that lifestyle. And yet there was a whole other side that I have yet to learn. And I'm sure there is even more for me yet to learn, which is a great thing I'm interested in exploring in today's topic and just reminds me of the importance of being an informed consumer.
Well, and being an informed consumer, you know, being in stores all over the country, being an informed consumer is not necessarily easy. You've brought this up about wanting to know certain things and when you shop the aisles, and it's not as easy as people think. I mean, you have to work to become a really informed consumer, and especially when it comes to the treatment of animals, because a lot of these labels are not as clear as they possibly could be to when you want to make that choice.
Yeah, there's the consumer side, and there's also the companion side for me. I've grown up with pets all my life, and mostly dogs. I had a cat at one point, and now I'm in partnership with a timber wolf, with a Belgian Shepherd wolf hybrid. And that is such a rewarding, it's family. It's really family. I became part of his family and he became part of mine. And so, if we open up the conversation to look at zoos, to look at circuses, to look at what is our relationship to animals really throughout, from livestock, to pets, to companion animals, to animals kept for our entertainment or so-called education. It's a big topic, and I wonder who decided one day that it would be okay to have a lion in San Francisco where it's cold, coastal, foggy, ocean weather, and I'm almost certain that lion is on antibiotics to survive there in that climate. It's as far away from African dry heat as you can imagine. And so, when did we as a society decide that it would be okay to take from a country what is uniquely theirs and bring it to the U.S. and then exploit it or display it? Interesting. So I look forward to the show, actually. We have an expert on the topic with us in this hour, Mark.
Well, from what Sita was saying and what you were just saying, it really reminds me is lately I've been stretching my own thinking on just about everything in my life. And when I started talking the other morning about rights, when I was talking to about this show, it really kind of got me thinking this isn't just a decision about animal rights. This is a decision about all rights and how we treat anything and anybody. And
yeah, really life, right?
Life itself. And that's what really got me thinking is where do these rules come from? And as you said, Helga, what gives us the right to have dominion or to have control over everything on the planet?
Well, Mark, that really speaks to me because there was a period in my life where I picked up the Bible and I wanted to read it to understand the word of God. And I wanted to come at it from more of an objective place because I know that there are so many translations, right? It wasn't written in English to begin with. So we've had to apply words that make sense to us. And so I was reading a passage and it had said something about the fact that, God granted us dominion over the land and all of its creatures. And it had a note about the word dominion and said, the original word was this, and what it actually meant was being in service of, being, because we are, maybe, potentially, and this is controversial for me to say on air, but this is what really stuck with me about it is, if somebody said, you are a species that has incredibly high intelligence, you humans have lots of intelligence. And with that comes a responsibility. And the responsibility that I want you to carry out is to actually be in service of and protect the land and all of its creatures. That's very different than dominating the mm-hmm. land and all mm-hmm. of its creatures.
Mm-hmm. And just so that brings it back full circle to Helga's original quote from Gandhi. And for me, it's like Gandhi said that to find yourself, you lose yourself in service. And mm-hmm. so with that, that makes sense for us to be in service to other things, other people and other things on the planet. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we will explore that much more deeply today. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And today we are assessing the rights of animals in this country with Stephen Wise, legal scholar and the president of the Non-Human Rights Project. That and more when we come back. Stay tuned.
Almost fell into that hole in your life.
Are you a chef, have a catering business, or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, walk right in to Earl's Organic Produce. Anyone can buy directly from us at wholesale prices. You don't have to be a natural food store to enjoy the freshest and most delicious organic produce. We are located on the San Francisco Produce Market at 2101 Gerald Avenue. We look forward to seeing you.
Walk-in hours are Monday through Friday throughout the night from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. Minimum purchase is one box or flat, cash or checks only. For more information, visit earlsorganic.com.
Working from home is awesome, except when it's not. If you're working from your couch or your coffee shop, chances are you're not your most productive. For thousands of entrepreneurs, co-working is the answer. Next Space is a co-working company with offices in L.A. and the greater San Francisco Bay Area. Find an innovative workspace, a built-in community, and great networking opportunities at Next Space. Visit nextspace.us for more information. Next Space, your best work happens here.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at BowmanCollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N College.org.
A thousand other boys.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Our topic today is animal rights, defining the greatness of a nation. As according to Mahatma Gandhi, the moral progress of a country can be judged by the way in which its animals are treated. The rights of animals is our topic today here on An Organic Conversation in just a minute. And as always, we are starting our show off with our weekly tip from the world of health and beauty. Here's Chef Sita and her holistic bite.
Thank you, Helga. Well, as Helga was saying, the holistic bite is my look at the whole picture of health and wellness. And I wanted to talk today about plant sources of protein. So whether you are just interested in diversifying where you get your protein, or if you happen to follow a diet that relies on plant sources of protein, something that is a really easy protein to come by as a vegetarian or a vegan are a lot of soy products on the market. So I really wanted to focus on natural plant sources of protein today. So not talking about soy. And so I made a list of some of my favorites because, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I was raised a vegetarian, and I think it's important for people to get their nutrients from a whole range of foods. So one great source is lentils or beans. And that's kind of been the primary staple for people in countries all over the world, because it is a really great source of protein. Half a cup or one cup serving can give you between 8 and 14 grams of protein, and it's so versatile. You can use it in soups. You can use it to make a hummus or a bean puree. It's great on salads. There are so many different varieties, chickpeas and cannellini beans and black beans and pinto beans and all different colors of lentils. So lots of experimentation within that. And then moving beyond that, you've got nuts and seeds, which are such a great kind of like condiment accompaniment to any food that you want to eat. You can sprinkle them on your salads. You can even find a nut or seed that works with whatever genre of food you're preparing. So if you're making Mexican for dinner, pumpkin seeds are a great addition. If you're making Italian for dinner, pine nuts are a great addition. And even though you may get a little bit less protein, a quarter cup will give you 8 grams of protein in it, which is a fair amount. But these are things that you want to build on throughout the day. So you can find yourself adding little bits of each of these proteins to your meals and snacks. And that creates a really well-rounded plant-based protein for the day. Another great source is quinoa, which gets a lot of airtime these days, which I think is very exciting as long as you're getting it sustainably sourced. Fair trade is the way you want to go when you purchase quinoa. And it is, of course, great as a whole grain side dish, which is the way a lot of people prepare it. But I also like to sneak it into soups. I do a spring soup that's a spring onion and asparagus that I saute, and then I cook it with a broth that has a little bit of turmeric, and then I add some of this quinoa that I toasted in coconut oil. And it's really actually quite simple. It's so delicious. It gives a little bit more of a hearty flavor, and it adds that protein to your soup, so it can be a whole meal. You can also use it to make a breakfast porridge as a protein-rich source alternative to oats. And I usually end up eating about a cup and a half of quinoa. Maybe that's because it's so delicious. I don't know if that's kind of the normal quantity that people eat, but that will give you about 12 grams of protein. You can also do things like nutritional yeast. And this is another one of those, kind of falls into the condiment category. And many people are not a fan of the name, but they are a fan of the flavor and the health benefits. And it's kind of got a savory flavor. It's a really great source of B vitamins as well as protein. And you can sprinkle it over your pasta. I actually really love sprinkling it over sweet potatoes, and my absolute most favorite way to have it is over popcorn with a little bit of black truffle oil. And with 2 tablespoons of nutritional yeast, you'll get about 8 grams of protein in that. And then the last thing, if you're feeling adventurous, and this is so, so good for you, is to incorporate some spirulina into your diet. And spirulina is a blue-green algae, and that means in addition to being protein-rich, it's also mineral-rich because it comes from the sea, which is so, so mineral-rich. And actually, I think in the case of spirulina particularly, it comes from freshwater lakes, but it is, like I said, a great source of protein, particularly complete protein, because it has all 9 essential amino acids. And you want to work your way up to this. If you start with a tablespoon, you're going to get about 4 grams of protein. You could work up to 2 tablespoons. But one thing I recommend, if you're not really a fan of that seaweed flavor to begin with, something about grapefruit juice neutralizes that flavor for a lot of people. So 1 tablespoon of spirulina mixed into about 2 cups of yummy, yummy, fresh squeezed grapefruit juice, which is a great trick that I learned from the restaurant I worked at in New York, Pure Food and Wine, will be so delicious, so power-packed, really wonderful for you, and it will change the way you think about algae. So good luck on your plant-based protein quest. I hope you found something new here and are encouraged to play in the kitchen, which is really one of my favorite things to do. So that was this week's Holistic Bite.
Thank you, Sita. Wow, yes, or you can give the blue-green algae to me. I love all that ocean stuff.
Yeah, that's true. You are a big fan of sea vegetables, which I think is awesome.
Love it. But Mark, we both looked at each other. What was it?
It was the condiment.
Accompaniment.
Condiment accompaniment.
Sure. Yeah, right.
I've never complimented my condiments, but now I will from now on. Well, I had a couple things that I wrote down while you were doing your holistic bite. One is, first of all, I love peas as protein. And I was thinking, you know, you were mentioning being a vegan and growing up a vegetarian. But one of the things nowadays, as more and more people are looking to not eat as much meat, maybe they're including that in their diet, but not as much. And that's where a lot of those beans and legumes and these different protein sources can actually allow them to continue to have protein and fiber, because most of those things that you brought up have a lot of fiber. And that's a lot of times people who have a heavy meat diet don't get enough fiber. And so that's going to give them the protein and the fiber to go along with that, which I really love. And And how do you sneak something into soup? Do you have to kind of put like a towel up and then kind of reach your hand around the pot?
You distract the soup over here. Here's soup. Here's pepper. And then check. No, what I also on a side note, actually, if people use plant-based protein to avoid animal protein for the reasoning of a vegan mindset, it's just important to me to point out that non-organic sources of protein may disturb the soil, may disrupt the life in the riparian areas, riparian habitats. The chemicals used in agriculture leach into the ocean, synthetic fertilizers. So if the animals are important to you in your choice of plant-based proteins, if that's one of the motivators, make sure you choose organic whenever possible, because non-organic agriculture is extremely harmful, killing animals in the process, whether at a farm or in the biosphere surrounding a farm. So,
well, particularly an important dialogue to have around soy, because soy, which is a whole other conversation in and of itself, but because soy is a product that people use to supplement for a lot of their protein, and so much of the soy is genetically modified and non-organic, it is important to choose.
And it does lead us into today's show. Mm-hmm. But as always, first, thanks to Ecobella, the Holistic Bite is brought to you very much in line with today's theme by the natural beauty company Ecobella. Ecobella offers a wonderful line of body care products and intelligent cosmetics. All of their products are preservative-free, gluten-free, and cruelty-free. That's why we love it here. Check it out, ecobella.com, and let us know what you think. Again, that website is Ecobella, ECCOBELLA.com. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we had such a great show on Rudolf Steiner and biodynamic agriculture last week with a fantastic guest, Jonathan Frey of Frey Vineyards, the first organic and also biodynamically certified vineyard in the country. He started his operation with his wife, Katrina Frey, some 30 years ago, and he shared his wisdom and observations about his land as he manages his vineyard as one living entity. Rudolf Steiner and biodynamic agriculture on last week's episode. And if you missed that show, no problem at all. You can simply visit anorganicconversation.com or iTunes, where all of our shows are available as podcasts, completely free of charge, of course. And you can download the show to your favorite device and then listen to us while you are out and about. And I actually heard that Mark's voice is exceptionally inspirational when you need to clean the house. So try that. You can also follow us on facebook.com/inorganicconversation for produce tips, recipes, and the latest and greatest on the real food movement and much, much more. And we love to hear from you. Please send us your comments or questions to share@inorganicconversation.com. Today we are talking about the rights of animals, following the premise that the moral progress of a nation can be judged by the way it treats its animals, a phrase Mahatma Gandhi coined. We want to dedicate the hour to understand the state of animal rights in this country, from pets to wild animals to zoos and circus animals to livestock and agricultural production. We are speaking today with Steve Wise, legal scholar and the president of the Non-Human Rights Project. That's all one word, nonhumanrightsproject.org. If you want to check out the website for more information, welcome, Steve Wise. Thanks for being with us on the show today.
Sure. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, let's just start off with, you know, first of all, what prompted you to do the work in non-human rights, and what are non-human rights?
Well, non-human animals don't have any rights, and that's what really prompted me to do it. They are legal things. They are seen in law as existing for the benefit of legal persons like we are, and so they're essentially invisible to the civil law. There's really in law very little difference, if any, between a chimpanzee and a chair.
Why was it important for you some, you know, decades ago to pick this up, to make this really your life path, to protect and instill some legal rights at least?
Well, I became a lawyer because I believed in wanting to work on the side of justice, and after I'd worked as a lawyer for several years, I ran into Peter Singer's book, Animal Liberation, and I had not really realized how non-human animals were treated and how many of them were treated the way so badly the way they were, and I just read that book and decided, like, right there that I would spend the rest of my life working as an animal protection and eventually an animal rights lawyer, and that's what I've been doing.
So, Stephen, is it Steve or Stephen?
Steve is fine. Stephen, okay. whichever makes you more comfortable. I answer to both.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I'm curious because you said that the legal things, the way that we classify non-human animals, are for the benefit of legal persons, and I'm a little bit unsure where, like, pet rights vary from livestock rights, vary from animals who are used in zoos and circuses and laboratories. So can you help us understand what rights, if any, these animals have and how it differs across these genres?
Yes. No non-human animal has any legal rights.
Even pets?
Pets, and yes. Mm-hmm. None do. They're all seen as being legal things. And as being rightless, they simply don't have them. They are very close to an inanimate object being treated like an automobile or a chair, and they're just about on the par with how human slaves would have been treated in the United States before the 13th Amendment.
So, Stephen, being a dog owner myself, I know if I choose to destroy my car, I have that right. If I mistreat my dog, I would be brought to court if somebody saw it and the police was there. Isn't that true? Like, could I torture an animal and in front of the police and get away with that?
Well, the question you're asking is something that's peculiarly local, and so in the United States you would have 50 different laws. 50 different jurisdictions, each state 51, you throw in the District of Columbia, that would address themselves to your problem. And so the answer might not be the same depending upon which state you were doing whatever actions you were doing. So the answer is maybe. Maybe
wow.
Not. It's hard to know.
So you're really saying there are states in this country where you could kill your own dog and you would not be brought to justice?
Well, I think in almost every state you could kill your own dog and not be brought to justice. The question is how you would kill your dog. So if you did it in a particularly brutal or cruel way, then you might be able to be prosecuted for doing that. And not just your dog, but I mean, if you did that for any
sure.
dog.
But under what law would you be prosecuted then?
Well, you'd have to look to see whether that state had an anti-cruelty statute or some statute that would address itself to that.
But that's
you don't need to be a non-human animal to be. I mean, you don't need to be dealing with a non-human animal to be regulated by the state. If I take a hammer and smash out the window of your car, I will be prosecuted in almost every state, maybe every state, for destroying your property. So if I take a hammer to your dog or I take a hammer to your car, I'm going to be prosecuted not because the dog has rights or the car has rights, but because there's a statute that says I can't harm your property. And there might be one because say, a dog is sentient, I might also be prosecuted not only for destroying your property, but also for being cruel to the dog.
So this show came about after us hearing a news piece that animal rights activist had obtained a video where extreme animal cruelty was filmed, and the court dismissed that tape.
Well, it's actually been somewhat of a trend. There are a lot of animal activists, and I read about this in a lot of the vegan magazines because there's a similarity with people who are choosing a plant-based lifestyle who want to protect animals. That's why they got into it, who are going undercover and filming footage of the mistreatment of animals, particularly in factory farms. And something happened where it went to court, and they said that these videos obtained illegally cannot be used against the owner and operator of these farms. And we're thinking, so these animals don't have any rights, which is why we wanted to bring you on as the expert. And now we're learning that none of them have any rights.
But it's still, it's filming cruelty and it's filming illegal practices, according to at least, you know, livestock animal standards. Why would the court dismiss any of it? I mean, if the court said this is not a case we even take on, but it's taking on the case, but it's dismissing any video footage, what's the legal situation here?
I have no idea. It would depend upon the state. It would depend upon the court. It would depend upon the charge. So for me to be able to give you any idea, I'd actually have to look at the papers that were filed and see what the action was of the prosecution and what the action of the judge was. There could be many reasons why criminal cases are dismissed. And if you're not looking at the papers, scrutinizing them, it's very easy to jump to the wrong conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. We're speaking with Stephen Wise, legal scholar and the president of the Non-Human Rights Project, working hard to establish any kind of countrywide law or protection from the law.
Let me jump in, if you don't mind.
Actually, we're taking a quick break, but we want to dedicate the second part all to your work. So stay with us. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
No mires hacia atrás. No quiero ver el camino.
At Eden Foods, we've always strived to have a strong, positive impact on farming practices and food processing techniques. As the oldest natural and organic food company in North America, our business practices and products endeavor to contribute to a peaceful evolution on Earth. We encourage everyone to be knowledgeable, discerning, and proactively involve buyers, as we are. Look for organic grains, beans, beverages, and more by Eden Foods at your local co-ops, natural food stores, and online at edenfoods.com.
Are you committed to green, socially responsible, and sustainable business practices? Percepticon can help with eco-friendly internet solutions, website design services, e-commerce solutions, mobile apps, and high-performance internet hosting for your business. Percepticon is a full-service agency that specializes in web consulting, strategy, and technology development, so you can successfully communicate with your audience. Lighten your tech footprint in a green hosting environment. Call Percepticon today at 925-937-9000 or visit them at percepticon.com.
SPUD stands for Sustainable Produce Urban Delivery. SPUD delivers the highest quality organic produce and the best locally sourced grocery items one can find directly to your doorstep. It's easy, it's convenient, and it supports your local economy. On every delivery day, SPUD takes at least 100 cars off the road that would have otherwise been driving to the grocery store. Reduce your carbon footprint, save time, and save money when grocery shopping with SPUD. Place your order today at spud.com. That's SPUD.com.
Indiferencia, lograron humillarme. No quiero compasión.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And our topic today is animal rights, defining the greatness of a nation, as according to Mahatma Gandhi, the moral progress of a country can be judged by the way in which its animals are treated. We are speaking with Stephen Wise, legal scholar and the president of the Non-Human Rights Project. That's nonhumanrightsproject.org, all one word. For more information, who's joining us today from Coral Springs, Florida. Stephen, so you decided to start this nonprofit and dedicate really your career and your personal life to establishing any kind of protection for animals. Tell us about the Non-Human Rights Project.
Well, the Non-Human Rights Project is established particularly to attack the problem that I've set out in my articles, in my books. The problem is that no non-human animals are considered legal persons. And a legal person means that if you are a legal person, that you have the capacity for some rights. And if you don't have it, then you're a legal thing, which is what non-human animals are. And when you're a legal thing, then you can be killed. You can be brutalized in many ways. And as you can see in the United States, you probably know more than 10 billion non-human animals are killed for food alone every year, without even taking into consideration those who are hunted or those who are fished or those who are in biomedical research facilities or those who are in circuses or zoos or all the other ways in which we exploit and abuse non-human animals. And the reason that can be done is that they are not legal persons and they don't have any rights or any capacity for any legal rights at all. So that is the problem that the Non-Human Rights Project was created and is working to solve.
Okay, Steve, I don't mean to stop your train of thought because I'm really enjoying where you're going. But so two things are occurring for me. One is that when Helga was talking about, that yes, of course, pets have rights or things like that. Is so we assume as a society that certain animals have rights. And secondly, where did this come from that there was this such a lack of respect for life other than human
life. Well, actually, and Steve, you compared that in the beginning with slavery, where it was convenient to have a slave. They had no rights before they became full citizens. And we can even go back further in history. Women didn't have voting rights. And so where does that notion come from that Mark was just addressing? When did we decide that it would be okay to bring a lion over and put it in a zoo and pump him up with antibiotics and look at it for $8 a day all day, unhappy, thinking that that's education? Where did this? And I'm pretty partial about this topic, obviously.
You can't tell.
But really, historically, when did we decide to, or was this always the case and we just haven't decided that it's actually a living being that needs to be respected? What's the historical roots?
Well, there's a difference. You can look at the problem through a philosophical lens, through a religious lens. Mm-hmm. I look at it through a legal lens. And my job is to try to help non-human animals, or at least some of them, obtain legal personhood so that they can have the kind of rights that people must respect, whether they want to respect them or whether they don't. And this, the to answer your question, I think, if you want to go back to how long ago the problem with the legal thinghood, I call it, of non-human animals became, as I set out in my writings, it goes back as far as you can go back in law, and it's never not been that way. And there's some folks who have written about the fact that the way in which we treated human slaves is really the way it really came in in prehistoric times from the way we treated non-human animals, that we treated them the same way. If you look at Roman law, you look at Greek law, human slaves and non-human animal slaves were treated very much in the same way. And so in many of my writings, I show how a human slave and a non-human animal slave are really viewed as almost the same thing. One of the books I wrote was called Though the Heavens May Fall, which it was a recounting of a very famous slave case in England in 1772, where that slave was freed by decree of the Court of King's Bench in London. And throughout the book, you see people arguing that a black human slave was essentially in the status of a non-human animal. And now, in legal terms, there are no legal slaves anywhere. There are illegal slaves, but there are not legal slaves anywhere, and that there's been a divergence. And now in the year 2013, you have all human beings on one side of this legal wall, where they're seen as legal persons with the capacity for rights. These rights may not always be respected, but they exist, either on a local or a national or a state or international level, but not for human beings. Now, what we're trying to do, what the Non-Human Rights Project is trying to do for non-human animals, is really what others did for human slaves.
Well, and I think that this is so critical, the work that you're doing, because as you outlined, there are lots of ways that you can approach this topic. You can come at it from the philosophical place, you can come at it from the religious place, and you're coming at it from the legal place. And there are so many things that have been tried to change them based on our philosophy or our religion, but the thing that sticks in this country is if it's put into law. So there needs to be somebody who can say, this is the legal definition, this is what you cannot do, and protect these sentient beings. So can you tell us how is Non-Human Rights Project going to accomplish this goal?
Sure. We've now, in the last five years, we spent about 30,000 hours preparing for the first tactical suit in a long series of strategic suits we're going to be filing across the United States. Now, one thing you have to realize is that is that this is not a federal question in the United States. We're not filing suit in a federal court. We are filing suit in a state court, and the problem is one like an anti-cruelty statute. It's a state-by-state-by-state struggle, similar to gay marriage. I don't know what the U.S. Supreme Court is going to do, but if they find that you don't have a right to gay marriage in the 14th Amendment, then it will continue to be fought state-by-state-by-state. And that's how we're fighting it. So the first thing that we have to do is persuade the high court of any state that any non-human animal plaintiff is a legal person. That is, she has the capacity for fundamental rights or right in any kind of right. So we will be filing suit on behalf of a non-human animal who has been the subject, or at least her species has, of an immense amount of research. Her cognition is understood, and it's understood to be highly complex. Likely, a non-human animal such as a great ape, a chimpanzee, a bonobo, a gorilla, an orangutan, or an elephant, an Asian elephant, or an African elephant, or a cetacean, a whale, or a dolphin. These are extraordinarily well-studied and extraordinarily complex, cognitively complex beings. So we will likely be finding one of those who are being imprisoned, and we will file a common law writ of habeas corpus, which is what was used to free the slave in London in 1772 that I wrote the book about. In fact, that's why I wrote the book, to show how it was done. So we will be similarly filing a common law writ of habeas corpus and arguing to the court that our chimpanzee or our dolphin or our elephant is a legal person and has the fundamental right to bodily liberty the way I do, the way you do, and that the judge should order that animal, that ape or cetacean or elephant, freed, and we would bring her to a sanctuary, unless she was a cetacean who could be rehabilitated and then released back into the wild. That would be our first series of cases, which is going to be quite complicated enough. But sure. The important thing is that we're trying to begin to set a series of precedents,
yes,
in which a court will recognize that it is in theory possible, which it is not now, but it will be then, possible for a non-human animal to be characterized as a legal person, categorized as a legal person, and then the argument will be not whether they can have rights, but what rights should each of them have.
Sure. And you know, Steve, listening to this whole interview has me just thinking that I think that if most of us knew that animals had no rights and were the same right as a chair, that you would have many more people supporting this cause to create basic rights, basic living rights for animals.
Yes, we had a great show on the rights of nature with the ambassador of the UN from Bolivia, who Bolivia changed their constitution to give nature equal rights. That means you don't have to have sick humans anymore from a poisoned river. Somebody can bring somebody to court because they poisoned the river. In the same vein, it is stunning to know and to learn. I agree with you, Mark, your comment earlier, that most people in this country would think that at least pets would have some kind of protection, but apparently they do not, and really important work that's...
Well, they may have a protection, such as if you're going, you can still kill them, but you can't take a knife and cut them, you know, piece by piece. That would be a violation of the cruelty statute. But you might still be able to kill them in a non-cruel way. So even companion animals, such as our dogs and cats, are generally protected by cruelty statutes, but they have no more rights than the chair that I'm sitting in.
Yeah. That's Stephen Wise, legal scholar and the president of the Non-Human Rights Project. That's nonhumanrightsproject.org, filing lawsuits. You're saying this year, Stephen, are you thinking?
Yes, our first lawsuit will be filed in the fall of 2013.
Okay.
We're excited to
good
follow
luck.
The progress.
We'll follow
this is
up
so
for
important.
Sure. Good luck with your critically important work. Again, according to Mahatma Gandhi, the greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way in which its animals are treated. Thank you, Stephen, for helping us to get where we need to get. Wonderful to have
Thank
you today.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And coming up is the produce tip of the week. Mark Mulcahy's What's in Season, when we come back with more. Stay tuned.
there, but it feels just a little bit bigger now.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Working from home is awesome, except when it's not. If you're working from your couch or your coffee shop, chances are you're not your most productive. For thousands of entrepreneurs, co-working is the answer. Next Space is a co-working company with offices in LA and the greater San Francisco Bay Area. Find an innovative workspace, a built-in community, and great networking opportunities at NextSpace. Visit nextspace.us for more information. NextSpace, your best work happens here.
Take it to every party, cause all you wanted to do was dance. Now my baby's dancing, but she's dancing.
And we're back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our topic today is animal rights, defining the greatness of a nation. Wonderful interview with Stephen Wise. Again, that website is nonhumanrightsproject.org. Check it out. He's filing a lawsuit this fall of this year to give animals some kind of legal right, which currently they do not. What's coming up now is a look at the end of May of the world of produce. Here's Mark Mulcahy with what's in season.
Yeah. And if you, Helga looked like he was just crawling to the dinner table, just trying to get at whatever's in season. And what's in season now is it's May. It's the end of May, right? Memorial Day weekend is next weekend. And everybody's thinking about barbecuing or getting together with friends or going on picnics
corn, music festivals, corn, and corn.
What is it going to be? I'm not sure, but I'm getting this feeling that it might be corn. Sweet corn, to be in fact. Hey, and so we've got Earl Herrick, the voice of the market, the San Francisco produce market, on the line from Earl's Organic Produce to talk about the corn season that everybody's been waiting on. Earl, corn, yes. Sweet corn. What's
hey,
up?
Corn, yes. Well, you know, it's a mainstay. What the wonderful thing about holidays is they're always food related.
Yeah, produce.
Everyone. I mean, it's Thanksgiving, whatever. And now we're in, what I love about spring and summer holidays is they're right in the middle of fresh produce seasons. So the benefit of the Memorial Day weekend is you're right in the very, right in the middle of the watermelon, the potatoes, and of course the corn crop. And in California and in the southern districts across the United States, think Florida and Georgia, you can get some great corn. And we're talking about bicolor, yellow, white, and the production's going to be strong out of the desert, California, and then migrating up to the bottom of the great valleys of San Joaquin Valley. And it's prime season. And the growers make it work this way because that holiday, they time that. And it's a good crop, though it could be a little tight because one major California grower had so many bugs last year that they had to rotate that crop out and give it a breather and let those bugs, you know, whatever they do, I guess they may eat themselves, I'm not sure. And so they rotate that out. So this year there's no production out of one particular grower, so production's a little tighter, prices are probably going to be a little higher, and I don't know, organic corn's always pretty expensive anyway. Haven't you found that, Mark?
Well, that's relative, because I think if you can get two ears for $1.50 or something, I've seen it as low as 75 cents. But generally, it's around about $1 an ear during this time of year, and so that's five for five. I mean, that's reasonable.
It doesn't sound expensive to me.
Yeah, who can eat five ears of corn? I mean, we might, but
Earl,
that's
a
lot of corn. 5 ears.
Well, two of them would be eaten raw, first of all, before they even got in the pot.
That's crucial.
Two would be eaten in the store, so you don't have to pay for those. Earl,
yes.
Go on.
Part of the expense is that there isn't an easy way to treat the bugs that love corn. It's a very high labor situation, and the fact is you just got to pay for it, because they run into earworms and army worms and even fungus, you know, corn smut, and the deal with all that is almost thoroughly a hand thing, hand application. So there's a lot of handling, a lot of expense to it.
Well, sure. and actually, just to follow that up, Earl, actually, if they're going to use BT on the corn, they literally have to put it on the silk of each corn ear of corn in order for that to kill the corn earworm, which is the biggest problem for organic corn. And so that is a lot of work.
And there are some beneficials like wasp that do some stuff. You know, that's a good natural predator.
Sure.
But BT is a good one, and that's what most of the guys are using. And that is a biological insecticide, and it's based on beneficial bacterium. So, it's good stuff, and it works.
Yeah, well, just to clarify that, BT is allowed in organic production. It's Bacillus thuringiensis, and it's a naturally occurring bacteria that is used to kill those larvae. I heard too, Earl, you're right, that those little wasps, especially tiny, tiny one, micro ones, organic farmers often buy like 20,000, and they just let them go, and they take care of those worms that we don't want in our corn in organic production. But it's important, if you care about it, to buy organic, Mark, because we're seeing...
Well, there's a lot of reasons, as Earl was saying, beyond not only the pesticide reasons and the pest problems, but also last year was the first year that we had GMO sweet corn. It's never been in the market before until last year, and it's being planted at a huge rate across the country. And so if you've been buying corn up until this point and it hasn't been organic, because the beginning of May starts and everybody says, oh, I want corn.
Chances are.
And there was very little organic corn in the beginning of the month, then most likely it was GMO, and there's a whole show on that, on why you may want and may not want to buy that. So that's a huge deal as far as sweet corn out there to make it organic.
You know, the other thing about the infestation, it gets stronger as the year goes on. I think maybe the heat brings on a little more activity for the pest. So, a good early crop is a good one to get into and start enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite recipe, Earl, fresh corn? Do you just grill it raw? What's the deal here?
Well, I put corn in everything. Whether it's mashed potatoes, scrambled eggs, or eat it, fresh. I like just to cut it off the corn, the cob, and just put it in almost everything.
I think you said that about everything we've ever had you on. What do you use with blueberries? Oh, I put it in everything. What do you use peaches for? Oh, I just eat them. I put it in everything.
I have a great blueberry corn recipe.
Of course.
Well, and I have to say, if you are ever fortunate enough to get invited to Earl's for a meal, it will be a meal you remember forever.
What's that corn blueberry recipe real quick, Earl? We can put that online too, but...
Yeah, we'll make a blueberry corn smoothie. It will be unbelievable.
Yeah. Okay. And that probably is the word you would use for that.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So, thank you, Earl, as always. It's a pleasure having you on the show. If you're going to buy corn, remember, you do not have to pull back the husk. You can grasp, put your hands around the cob and with the husks on, and you can feel whether or not it's a full vibrant ear. And then rub your thumb along the husk, down the shaft of the husk, and you can feel whether or not there's any missing kernels, and then you'll know. And then when you get it home, it can 3 days in the fridge is probably good time, but I would still eat it quicker than that. It would probably wouldn't make it home, but that's so that's this this week's edition of What's in Season.
Thank you, Mark. Delicious.
What's your favorite recipes?
My favorite way to eat it is raw, and it's bicolor corn is my favorite corn, which is called butter and cream, you know. But bicolor corn eaten raw and then grated into salads or into, you know, beans or into just about anything, as Earl would say, during the summer. That's my favorite way to do it. Or grilled.
I have a recipe on our website for a fresh corn salsa that uses raw corn. It's so simple. It is so good. It is good in everything. You can stir it into your avocado for a quick guacamole.
Oh, great
you
idea.
Can mix it into your polenta. There's so many things you can do with it. It's great by itself. Ugh, I cannot
that's
wait.
Facebook,
I'm so excited.
Facebook.com/anorganicconversation.
And Helga.
Helga, what about you?
I love, culinarily speaking, I love grilled corn. I think, you know, when it's not that hot anymore, grilled 5 minutes later and it's just warmed up, everything is better at room temperature anyway. Mm-hmm. But grilled corn is just amazing. But your raw corn did prompt a memory of me being 6, 7, 8 years old. We lived on the outskirts of Hamburg, and there were cornfields. I think it was actually feed corn, not even, you know, human consumption corn, but we didn't really care, we didn't know. And so I know exactly what raw corn tastes like, that kind of tiny bit chalky, sweet, yummy, you know, very starchy, bready, but broken off the stalk in that moment and eaten right there. And delicious, total summer.
And you know that what you know when you're talking about that raw corn and that grilled corn. Actually, grilled corn on a salad. It's a little bit warm on a cool salad. Is a great summer recipe.
Meat substitute right there.
Yeah,
right?
You don't miss
any texture.
Oh, I'm so excited for corn.
Yes. Thank you, Mark. Good update. And Earl is such an inspiration. He uses everything for everything. He lives in the world of produce. Earl Harry, that is. Yes.
Well, what a great show this was. I'm so happy that we explored this angle of our relationship with animals. I'm always moved by different spiritual practices of people around the world. And something that's always spoken to me is the Native American tradition, where they're connected. They were and they continue to be connected with everything in nature, with all of the flora, with all of the fauna. They have relationships with the animals, and that kind of respect and seeing of each other as equals, or even being in service of them, it reminds me of the importance of being part of this ecology of the world. And we have a really beautiful quote from a Native American chief, Chief Dan George.
Yeah, you and me.
You.
Oh, yes. Who said, "If you talk to the animals, they will talk with you, and you will know each other. If you don't talk to them, you will not know them, and what you do not know, you will fear. And what one fears, one destroys." And we don't really have time for an organic moment, but I do want to end with another quote on animals, because they all mean so much to us. Again, from Mahatma Gandhi, who we started the show with, he also said, "I hold that the more hopeless a creature," and actually it has nothing to do with animals, really. This is such a beautiful metaphor for everything, for life itself, as Mark said. "I hold that the more hopeless a creature, the more entitled it is to protection by man from the cruelty of men."
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. Underwriting production, Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
And you can follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/anorganicconversation.
We're your hosts, Helga Helberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Ronnie Palomar.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Crazy,
I'm gonna lie more. What you're feeling, there's a reason for. I wanna do right. Oh, gotta do right. Do I love you? Oh, you know I've tried. What you after, can't find in my eyes. I'm gonna